It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Trailing in the polls, Donald Trump used a speech to the Detroit Economic Club to compare his business vision to what he called the Obama-Clinton economy of stagnation.
It will present a night and day contrast to the job-killing, tax-raising, poverty-inducing Obama-Clinton agenda.
Trump backed off his original personal income tax plan, which used 10, 20, and 25% brackets. Now he says he will eliminate the top bracket of 39% and, taking a page from Republicans in Congress, creates three new ones at 12, 25, and 33%. Trump also reiterated his plan to cut corporate income taxes to 15% and eliminate carried interest benefits for hedge fund managers and other Wall Street bigwigs. Reading directly from today's Washington Post, a paper he's banned from his news conferences, Trump trashed Clinton for a broken promise while a New York senator to create 200,000 jobs in the Empire State.
Data shows that upstate actually lost jobs, a lot of them, during Clinton's first term. In other words, she was all talk, no action. Upstate New York is a disaster.
Trump twice promised details on his plans in the days ahead, but got specific when it came to Hillary Clinton's results in Detroit and worldwide.
She supports the high taxes and radical regulation that force jobs out of your community. And the crime policies have made you far, far less safe.
Trump unveiled a long list of economic advisors recently, many of whom have contributed to his campaign. They are mostly businessmen he says will guide his decisions, in contrast to the special interests he says have created horrible trade imbalances and corrupted the nation's politicians, including Clinton.
Every policy she has tilts the playing field towards other countries.
Trump casts himself as the race's true change agent.
The other party has reached backwards into the past to choose a nominee from yesterday who offers only the rhetoric of yesterday.
All right, Sandy Rios, with you. That was Carl Cameron's report, at least a little bit, on Donald Trump's speech yesterday in Detroit on the economy. Sandy Rios again with you in the morning. And I think that is one of the major stories, but there are a lot of stories. What was the plan? Was it a good plan? You know, Carl, like the rest of the press here in D.C., you know, hinted that this was all favoring big business types. I don't think Carl's a fan. And I think he is part of the Washington media elite. And now we know, honestly, we know because of a New York Times writer that, here, I want to read this to you. This just came out in the New York Times yesterday, and it's written by their media columnist. And this is what he said. His name is Jim Ruttenberg. If you view a Trump presidency as something that's potentially dangerous, then your reporting is going to reflect that. You would move closer than you've ever been to being oppositional. That's uncomfortable and uncharted territory for every mainstream non-opinion journalist I've ever known, and by normal standards, untenable. And he goes on to talk about it would be an abdication of political journalism's most solemn duty to ferret out what the candidates will be like in the most powerful office in the world. In other words, he goes on and on to say, in this case, Trump is so unfit, so bizarre that we must now, we must sort of destroy him. That's basically what we've been talking about. That's what I've been saying to you. The press is loaded for bear. They hang out with each other. They repeat the same phrases. And they are absolutely reporting anything they can that will destroy Donald Trump, and including embellishing and holding things out that you need to know about Hillary Clinton. They're doing this amazingly. As a matter of fact, Washington Post, I have to say, remember the story about the baby last week? Remember what a terrible, awful week Donald Trump had because he kicked a baby out of one of his rallies, et cetera, and it goes on. And, you know, he criticized Mr. Khan You fill in the list. I'm sure you've heard it repeated over and over again. Well, of course, the Washington Post now finally, what, a week later, comes out and admits that he did not kick a baby out of the campaign. It was a joke. And on I could go. And then, of course, hardly anything is being said about Mrs. Clinton and her unbelievable actions and statements this past week. Unbelievable things that she has been responsible for. One of those is maybe, perhaps, the hanging of an Iranian nuclear scientist who was, we think, helping us. He came here and then went back to Iran, whatever the circumstances, and then was hung. James Rosen tells the story better than I. Let's listen.
On his return to Iran in July 2010, smiles for Shahram Amiri. The nuclear scientist had made a pilgrimage to Mecca, then disappeared for a year, only to turn up in a bizarre series of videos in which he claimed alternately to have been kidnapped by the CIA to Tucson and tortured, and to be pursuing his studies here safely and freely.
He's free to go. He was free to come. These decisions are his alone to make.
Amiri then said he escaped to the Pakistani embassy in Washington and demanded a flight home. Initially, the Iranian regime welcomed him back as a hero, a double agent spying against the U.S., only to hang him as a traitor who gave nuclear secrets to the U.S.
Americans assumed for a while that Iran was not aware of this person's actions, or what he was linked to, or how he was taken to Saudi Arabia and taken away from there.
We've made our concerns known writ large around around Iranian due process, around Iranian respect for human rights.
With Amiri's return still being finalized, Clinton's deputy chief of staff, Jake Sullivan, sent an email to his boss noting that Clinton had privately discussed the case and saying news coverage of it could prove, quote, problematic. A week earlier, a top energy advisor to the secretary had written to Sullivan, describing Amiri as a, quote, friend to the U.S. and advising how to finesse the issue publicly. We have a diplomatic psychological issue, not a legal issue, wrote Ambassador Richard Morningstar. Our friend has to be given a way out. We should recognize his concerns and frame it in terms of a misunderstanding with no malevolent intent, and that we will make sure there is no recurrence. That was forwarded to Clinton, whose private server was so inadequately secured, the FBI concluded that, quote, hostile actors may have gained access to it.
That goes to show just how reckless and careless her decisions was to put that kind of highly classified information on a private server.
All right. That's, of course, James Rosen on Fox. Now, here's the thing. Donald Trump kicked a baby out of a campaign event, allegedly, which he didn't do. Donald Trump had the audacity to fight back when a Muslim Gold Star dad attacked him from the stage. That's his crime, and yet Hillary's is what? Let's see. There are multiple things I could point to, but this is probably one of the most egregious. In fact, Eric Prince, who's a former Navy SEAL and the former CEO of Blackwater, in an interview with Breitbart yesterday, said when he claims that from what we know about this Iranian nuclear scientist, he came to this country, stayed for a while. He claimed when he was here that he was kidnapped and forced to come here. And you heard Hillary in that clip publicly say, oh, he's here of his own free will. Well, that in itself put him in danger if he wasn't. And if he came to help, why would you even say that? So then my understanding from just the bits I'm learning is that he wanted to go back. The allegation is from Eric Prince and others that the Iranians were threatening his family. And it was just and you saw in the clips, maybe if you watched the news last night, him holding his little boy when he went back to Iran. And here's what Eric Prince says last night. When he went back to Iran, there was no talk of him being executed. Once Mrs. Clinton's emails were released, he was executed. What does it mean? It means, once again, America does not take care of the people that help America. This guy was a treasure trove of information on the Iranian nuclear program, and he's dead. We leave the Pakistani doctor who helped us find bin Laden still in Pakistani prison. And on we could go with the claims. So, Mrs. Clinton, you know, but she didn't kick a baby out of her rally, or did she criticize a Gold Star dad who criticized her back? She didn't do those things, that's for sure. But she did have an unsecure server, which we believe put this man's life at risk. Very interesting story last night. Kelly Wright actually told it this morning on Fox and Friends First. Let's listen.
On Monday, Freedom Watch USA filed the lawsuit in the U.S. District Court for the District of Columbia on behalf of the parents. Patricia Smith, the mother of Sean Smith, and Charles Woods, the father of Tyrone Woods, are suing former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton for the wrongful death of their sons, plus emotional distress and defamation. The two men were killed along with Glenn Daugherty and Ambassador Christopher Stevens during an attack on the consulate in Benghazi on September 11, 2012. Now, the suit claims Secretary Clinton was, quote, extremely careless with the handling of classified information by using a private email server, which they say contributed to the deaths of their sons. The suit further alleges that Clinton's use of a private server enabled terrorists in Benghazi to find the four Americans. Smith spoke about her son's death during the Republican National Convention.
We lost four brave Americans who made the ultimate sacrifice for the country they chose to serve, and the American people lost the truth. For all of this loss, for all of this grief, for all of the cynicism the tragedy in Benghazi has brought upon America, I blame Hillary Clinton.
President Obama and Secretary Clinton attended the funeral of the four men. The parents say Clinton told them the deaths were sparked by an anti-Islam video. Clinton denies that.
As other members of families who lost loved ones have said, that's not what they heard. I don't hold any ill feeling for someone who in that moment may not fully recall everything that was or wasn't said.
There are two options. One is either Mrs. Clinton is lying, or else she has a bad memory because of her age or her head injury that she suffered.
All right, so that's Kelly Wright's report this morning, and that's Patricia Smith and Charles Woods bringing charges. Charles Woods is, you know, the father of Tyrone Woods. I told you I have his picture right here with me. I know Charles Woods. He's a committed Christian, just so you know, by interest's sake. And he's the one who said he kept a journal. He knows exactly what she said, and so did Patricia Smith. So they're bringing that lawsuit. I think that's very important and very interesting. But Hillary Clinton is more trustworthy on national defense. So says a letter written by something like, I don't know, 30 former national security experts who, you know, I could talk about Tom Ridge, who was the governor in Pennsylvania when Planned Parenthood and the abortion clinics were wreaking havoc. Unsafe and unclean, not a conservative, and yet he's on that list, of course, attacking Donald Trump. It's just, I could go down the track, and they're concerned about his ability to handle national security, not so much Hillary Clinton, because she did so well in Benghazi, and she did so well on this Iranian nuclear scientist, and she's done so well. It's amazing to me. So now Republicans, of course, are attacking Donald Trump. I want to tell you, just in my inbox, even as I started the show this morning, there's a letter going out to members of the RNC asking them to end their support of Donald Trump and to try to get him, to stop him from getting the nomination. This is an all-out effort. And last night, Evan McMullen declared his candidacy. And let's listen to just listen to what he has to say. This was on ABC.
I do not trust him to make decisions with our military whatsoever. With the lives of the men and women serving in our armed forces and intelligence services. He's already demonstrated that he doesn't respect them or their families. His attacks on our American heroes, like the Khan family and like John McCain. This is somebody that we cannot trust the lives of those who are already risking their lives to. He is inhuman. Donald Trump does not care about anyone other than himself.
Okay, so Evan McCullough, he is inhuman. Donald Trump is inhuman. Is there a limit? Is there a limit to the descriptors? So Evan McMullen, a Mormon, I don't know, that he says he has no connection with Mitt Romney, but Mitt Romney is a never-Trumper, and we know he's behind this effort to stop Donald Trump. It's amazing. I seem to remember that Christian conservatives were told if they didn't vote for Mitt Romney, that they would be, you know, disloyal, that they didn't have the big, larger view of what would happen. I guess it doesn't work the other way. What do you think? All right, coming up next, Congressman Dave Bratt, professional economics professor, to discuss Trump.
Wondering what the new school year could bring? Here's Tim Todd of Revival Fires International.
Are you tired of the way that things are in your school? Are you sick and tired of what the devil is doing in the lives of young people that are going to the keg beer parties, having sex outside of marriage, doing drugs, smoking pot? Are you tired of it? The Truth For Youth Bible is a spiritual weapon for you to win your friends to the Lord Jesus Christ. You will take a Bible to school and give it to somebody in school that's not serving God. God will bring in the harvest. The light shining in darkness is going to be you taking the Word of God and introducing your friends to the Lord Jesus Christ.
Help bring the message of the gospel to America's youth. To get your free Bible now during Truth For Youth Bible Week, order online at revivalfires.com. This is a simple and free way to make a difference for eternity.
Did you know there's an approved healthcare choice just for Christians that's founded on the timeless principles in God's Word? It's not insurance. It's MediShare. Over 189,000 believers across America who love God and share each other's healthcare bills. It's about half the cost of health insurance, and you never pay for medical practices that go against your Christian beliefs. Best of all, the healthcare law includes a special provision for MediShare members, so you don't have to buy insurance or face penalties. MediShare is affordable healthcare without compromise.
Learn how thousands of Christians can help you save on your healthcare. For your free information guide, call 855-PSALM-23. Not available in Montana. MediShare, affordable biblical healthcare. Call 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Stearns with this Fox News and commentary next. How would you like to finish your degree online? Truett McConnell University makes that possible with their top-notch online program. You can even earn a master's in theology. For 70 years, Truett McConnell University has been preparing students to fulfill God's high calling on their lives, on campus or online. A degree that can not only change your life, but also your workplace. Truett.edu is the website. That's Truett.edu. The Olympics are well underway, and so far Rio is getting mixed reviews. Fears of a mosquito swarm spreading the Zika virus have so far proven to be unfounded, and our waterbound athletes seem to be navigating through Rio's river of sewage. Meanwhile, some in the mainstream media not too happy with Michael Phelps, upset that he was selected to carry the American flag in the opening ceremony. Some pundits wanted a Muslim to carry the flag. One CNN talking head said, "America has enough talk. All successful rich white guys hogging the spotlight." CNN won a gold medal in tolerance and diversity. Meanwhile, NBC's getting pounded on social media for its coverage of the games, from the condescending banter between the anchors to the nonstop commercial breaks. I got to be honest with you, folks, about 10 minutes into that mess, and I was hoping to get bitten by one of those mosquitoes. I'm Todd Stearns.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
The city of Detroit is the living, breathing example of my opponent's failed economic agenda. Every policy that has failed this city and so many others is a policy supported by Hillary Clinton. She supports the high taxes and radical regulation that force jobs out of your community. And the crime policies have made you far, far less safe. And the immigration policies that have strained local budgets and the trade deals like NAFTA, signed by her husband, that have shipped your jobs to Mexico and other countries. And she supports the education policies that deny your students choice, freedom, and opportunity.
All right, well, that was just a portion of Donald Trump's speech yesterday in Detroit. And what a perfect setting. Honestly, I remember reading a multiple-page expose on the devastation and disaster that Detroit is. It would take me an entire show to describe to you how deadly. I've seen photos comparing what a nuclear attack does to a city as compared to what the policies of the left have done to the city of Detroit. It's just amazing. Well, when I was thinking about the story yesterday about Trump's proposal on, you know, economics, I'm thinking, and let's see, who do I know who understands economics? And I'm going, ticking through the list, and then I realized there is no one better than our next guest. His name is Congressman Dave Brad. He's a professor. He was professor of economics before he was elected to Congress. He has his Master's of Divinity from Princeton, but he also has his Ph.D. in economics from American University, and he joins us this morning. Good morning, Congressman Brad.
Hey, good morning, Sandy. Great to be on. Thanks for that nice intro.
I'm anxious to hear what you have to say about this, but I want to take a detour just for a second. Also, Congressman Brad is the author of a new book called American Underdog, Proof That Principles Matter. Congressman, today is an interesting day to have you on, and I actually didn't even think about it when I invited you, but this is the day when Paul Ryan is being challenged by Paul Nellen in Wisconsin. Many have compared your race against Derek Cantor to what's happening in Wisconsin. I would just like to know what your thoughts are today about this race.
Yeah, well, there are similarities. Paul gets back to his district, I think, more than my opponent back in my primary. But on some of the key issues, we got some big differences. And Nealon is striking a chord on immigration. I ran just on illegal immigration. And that was a big issue back then in terms of bringing down wage rates and competing against those at the lower end of the economic spectrum. They don't need any more competition in the workforce. And since then, it's morphed into the Syrian refugee crisis, the wide-open southern border. ISIS has threatened to come through the border. This week, we had someone infiltrated the Washington, D.C. police force from the radical world. And so it's a huge issue. Leadership has completely ignored it. And then, you know, we've had other issues of leadership in terms of getting the budget. We've had a cromnibus and then an omnibus, et cetera. And so in the trade deals, Nealon also differs. And so the leadership has a thin ear when it comes to some of these big issues that are huge issues for Republican voters. And so it'll be an interesting contest. Paul gets back more. He's a free market theorist, et cetera, but we haven't had much success in pushing that stuff through. And so those are some of the similarities and differences.
Yeah, no, well noted. We are going to get into the economic aspects of Trump's speech, but there was a huge loss last week, Congressman, when Tim Hillskamp went down. He was one of the chief opponents of John Boehner and also then Speaker Ryan. Paul Gosar is under attack in Arizona, and I know that they tried to get you out in your district as well. They're not just accidentally doing the wrong things. They're very intentional, don't you think?
Yeah, well, especially in light of what we're going to talk about. When you get to the economy or whatever, I mean, here's some guys, including me, that are free market pro-business, right, in the Adam Smith sense, that we want everybody, especially small business, to have a level playing field. And so when you have the Chamber of Commerce coming after somebody like this, I mean, that tells you all you need to know. They do not want a level playing field, right? They want the special perks and power and the crony stuff going on. And it's a disaster. And everybody knows it, right? I mean, when you get Donald Trump and Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders and Dave Brat all agreeing that the system is rigged, I mean, the American people know the system is rigged. And so the system took it out on Tim Hillskamp. And leadership had something to do with that. It was a bunch of leadership, you know, back groups that work in the background and come up at the last minute, raise a ton of money. And the result is terrible.
Yeah. For you and your race, though, your opponent dropped out. And so thank God you stay with us in Congress. And so with that now, Dave, you're probably one of the few people, I'm guessing, maybe I could count on two fingers, the number of people in Congress who actually have some expertise at economics. So I'm very interested to know, I've read, you know, I know what Donald Trump said, but I want to know what you think about the most important things that he said. First of all, what things stood out to you as really strong proposals?
Well, I think the strongest thing he did was spoke in a way that American people will get what he's saying. And so that Detroit metaphor is the strongest piece. And he just used that to go through everything, right? No matter what a Republican does, the Democrats are going to call you names and say you're a supply sider and pro-business and all this kind of thing. And the proper response from our side, we're just chicken, right? Our leadership after the Romney loss, we came up with this autopsy report that said we ought to be scared of everybody. Instead of saying, of course we're pro-business, right? Who do you think creates jobs? And so, and especially the current economic growth evidence is just terrible on the Democrat side. Under Obama, the last 6 months was 0.7 economic growth, 0.7% economic growth. And then this past quarter, 1.2% economic growth. So those are the facts. And then when we have responses that have worked in the past, they just call names because their economic performance is bad on the numbers. But he went through Detroit very, very well. I love the fact that he did bring up education because that's so important, right? That those kids in Detroit are all children of God in every major metropolitan area. These kids are being cut off from a promising future. And these kids deserve some choice of some sort, right? And the Democrats have a monopoly on those public schools. They run the city, they run the county, they run the state in large parts. In Detroit, we have a Republican governor, but he can't override the school districts. And so Trump, the other proposals, just the standard kind of Republican tax reform, tax deductions were new for child care. The trade piece is new. And I think he's woken everybody up on that. We're going to take another hard look at these trade deals because they're not free market, right? The big companies and the big countries get their lobbyists to go to bat for them in these trade deals, and they walk line by line through sector and through each individual good. Well, the small guy can't do that. And so we need to set up a truly free trade system that allows the small guy to trade as well. And in the meantime, you put a little hold on things until we get things right. But those are the basic things that caught my ear. Now, of course, the immigration piece, he's been brilliant on. And we do that in order to help the low-income folks in this country. If you bring another few million people in, guess what happens to the wages of the low-wage worker? They go down even further. And everybody knows this. And the left just responds with name-calling. I saw some of the heavy hitters on the left come out and no substance. And it's amazing that there's never the same critique against Hillary or Bill Clinton or the left or Obama, not a word about a crazy economic policy. And so those are basic observations.
Well, Mrs. Clinton, criticized Trump's plan and said it was a plan for billionaires. Is it possible to lift an economy this big without improving the financial circumstances of its wealthiest citizens? I mean, is it even possible if you just helped the poor and the middle class, can you rebuild an economy?
Well, no, and that's what's missing is the context. In my book, I go over this. Today, I won't be able to get through it. But in the book, I say the three pillars that made us great as a country happened in historical order, and they're all crucially important. And the first and fundamental is the Judeo-Christian tradition. That sets the values, the morals, the ethics, right? Adam Smith, John Adams all said this republic was built for a moral people. And so the left, right off the bat, right, gets us into this class division dialogue, the billionaires versus poor versus, it's not about that. That kind of language was back at Karl Marx, but it was not at our founding. And for the last 200 years, we have a growth record because we didn't get into those petty debates on these class divisions the way we are now. And it's killing us, right? We have the Judeo-Christian tradition. You try to do what's best for everybody. You love your neighbors, yourself. And then the second pillar is the rule of law, and then free markets, right? Free market system. The left is opposed right now in academia to all three. They're full-out assault on the Judeo-Christian tradition in higher ed, Harvard, Yale, Princeton, et cetera. You can't mention religion, you get laughed out of the place. Rule of law, the Democrats are mocking our police officers while the Republicans are praising them and thanking them for their hard work. In free markets, that's what we're talking about here. And so we have to defend against people who have been hugely successful in the world making money, knowing how to structure deals, et cetera, going to work on behalf of our government. We shouldn't apologize. We should be praising these people and thanking them. They're going from being billionaires to doing hard, hard work in the public sector for peanuts compared to what they're getting paid for.
Well, you know, I think part of
the... We ought to be praising them, and thank goodness we're due for a turn.
Yeah, I think, I know that you know, of course you know. The confusion is that free market capitalism and crony capitalism are not the same thing. And so there's a door that people like Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton are walking through because it's a twist and a perversion. And even free trade, as you said, is not free. It's being controlled and it's become a system in which to enrich people in an unfair way. And by the way, to prove your point about communism, that the things they're talking about, the class system, et cetera, the language they're using, the Communist Party USA is full bore embracing the Hillary Clinton campaign. I'm sure they would embrace Bernie Sanders if he'd been the nominee too.
Right,
but it really there's
right.
no wiggle room between their platform and Hillary Clinton's.
Right, right. And you just brought up the right distinction between free markets and the crony capitalism, right? And so again, look at the evidence. Where is crony capitalism housed in the real world today? It's housed in Washington D.C. I find very few people who say that Washington, D.C. is a Republican city, right? So the irony of ironies is the Clintons, who have a $2 billion Clinton Foundation and have made millions and millions of dollars somehow in government jobs, how that is possible, and all the cronies under them are profiting and enriching themselves off of a fixed-size pie, right? The government does not produce economic growth. Business does. And so now we have racial tensions because everyone's racing to D.C. to get a fixed piece of a fixed pie that's not growing. And that's the wrong philosophy. Instead, we need to teach our kids at a young age that business is morally good. It's your calling. No matter what you do on this earth, I take pride in what you do because God has put you here for a purpose, and you can rise to any heights. Look at me. I was a economic press professor at a small college, and all of a sudden I'm in Congress, right? So miracles can happen, and you got to keep the faith.
Absolutely. And let me just also further a comment you made a minute ago. The cronies, and that's on the left and on the right, some Republicans, some Democrats, are making money hand over fist by this corrupt system, which is not free
right.
market capitalism. And that's why they don't really care who wins for the presidency. They're happy with Mrs. Clinton or whomever. They're happy to stop Donald Trump because he is actually ushering in what seems to me. Would you agree, Dave? Is he actually ushering in free market capitalism with these proposals?
Yeah, well, one thing's for certain is he's going to break up the status quo, right? And that's why there's all this unease. Even at the military level, people are calling the names, et cetera. That's because they're not going to get the jobs anymore. And he's going to go into these administrations and see what's going on in all these buildings, right? The agriculture building, the education department building. And he's going to just see, like, sclerosis, hardening of the arteries and bureaucrats who have been there forever doing nothing. And he's going to get rid of a lot of it. And so there's no doubt about it. People are freaking out because he's going to rock the boat. And as he said in his economic speech, and people don't, right, this sounds... In passing, there's $2 trillion. This is widely recognized number in regulatory burden on the economy. The economy is $18 trillion. $2 trillion. And so you look at Detroit, right? They got Sarbanes-Oxley and Dodd-Frank and EPA regs. And to build a car, it's got to be every single part of the car is regulated. And it's a perfect example. China doesn't have to do all of these kind of things. No, the rest of the world doesn't. And so they're competing with us, and they're making products that don't have to go through this huge, gross regulatory burden, and we can't compete. And so that's why we're losing jobs. And Trump is just a pragmatic guy. He gets what's going on. He's identified it, and he's saying exactly what he's going to do.
You know, just to quantify this, I just read an article this morning that under Obama, $743 billion is the cost of the regulations he's put in place. And he's made one major rule for every 4 or 5 days that he's been in office. And these regulations are breaking the backs of all kinds of business, big business and small business. And so let me just get practical. A couple of the things that Donald Trump is proposing is regulatory relief for small businesses. They're being crushed too, are they not, Dave?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up. And everybody out there that's listening, if you want to go to DaveBratt.com and become part of the team, but what I need everyone out there to do is contact NFIB, right? The small business guys. And I'm one of the small guys. Like, we are responsible for 70% of the jobs in this country. And we, the small business person, is getting annihilated. We got the fiduciary rule on Wall Street. You got the franchisee rule that's putting people out of business. You got the overtime rule. You got a football coach, right, that works 80 hours for $26,000 because they love the game and they love helping the kids out. And they're going to lose their job underneath this overtime rule. It affects everybody. Nonprofits, healthcare is getting annihilated. And basically, we've told the Obama administration, and they actually know it's actually going to hurt the poor themselves. So even they're starting to get a little whiff of this thing. But yeah, they're just making stuff up that sounds good, that's well-intentioned, and it's hurting the small guy over and over and over because the small guy is not organized. If you put the regulatory stuff on the huge firms, they can get through it, right? They'll say, okay, you can do this. We got enough lawyers. We can wade our way through this thing. But the small guy cannot. I have case after case after case of small business going out of business, coming into my office seeking relief, and it takes a year or two because we have to sue the federal government, and that takes a year or two. And by then, the small business is out of business. And so make sure you all get in touch with NFIB, your small business lobby on Capitol Hill. We need to grow that. We need to make it stronger so that we have a voice up there equal to the big guys.
So they can find that at DaveBratt.com?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, all right. So I want to mention a couple of other specifics here because energy is a serious problem for all of us, and it certainly will be more as the costs, remember the president said he was going to destroy the coal power plants and that energy prices would necessarily skyrocket. So Donald Trump's response is to ask Canada to renew its Keystone Pipeline permit application, to rescind the Climate Action Plan, to open offshore drilling and kill the Paris Climate Agreement. That's pretty amazing, too, isn't it?
No, it is amazing, and I got a shocker for the left on this one, and most people miss the basic idea here. I did my PhD on cross-country economic growth, and guess who has the cleanest environments in the world? The capitalist countries, right? So it's kind of like the billionaire thing. We're always on the defense, like we're the bad guys somehow. The free market, capitalist, rich countries, rich people do not like dirty rivers in their backyard. Rich people do not like dirty lakes for their kids to swim in. Therefore, rich people figure out how to solve things. We have the cleanest air in the world. We've got the cleanest water in the world, roughly speaking, right, for all the fact checkers out there. And capitalist countries get it right. And so you're right. We need to go to work on this energy. We have two Saudi Arabias underneath us in terms of natural gas that are just sitting there. And the left, for some reason, I don't know. I mean, I guess they want to. It's like they don't want to put people to work, right? So our side has proposals to put people to work, huge, in a huge way. That's real private sector jobs that will grow the economy and provide input prices way lower, right? Everybody uses energy. Every business uses energy. So that's an input into making your refrigerator and your cars and your everything you use every day, right? So that'll lower your prices. So it's just a win-win across the board, and you got some clear choices to make. And so I think the average American, I think there's going to be a wave. Right? Trump had a couple tough weeks politics-wise, but I think there's a wave coming our way.
Well, I'd like to see a wave come our way. That would be very encouraging because we certainly had enough of them come against us. It's been kind of battering for a long time here. Yeah. Congressman, I'm glad you're in a safe seat. That's all I can say. And let me just say, Congressman Dave Bratt, again, it's Dave Bratt, DaveBratt.com to get in touch with the Small Business Association. Also, his book is American Underdog, Proving That Principles Matter. Congressman Dave Bratt, thank you so much for your time, especially today, and we have to talk again soon, okay?
Hey, Sandy, thanks for your faith, and thanks for spreading it all over the country.
All right. We're all doing our part best we can. All right. Thanks a lot, Congressman. All right. Coming up next, just stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Since I've led tours for many years to the Holy Land, Israel, many people ask me, what's your favorite place to go? I have two, really. The Garden Tomb and Calvary and the Sea of Galilee. Now, I like all the places we stop along the way in Israel, but those two places in particular are very special and meaningful. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. We'll be going to all the places you've read about in the Bible since you were a child. It's going to be a very special tour of Israel, the Holy Land, March 9 through 17, 2017. We're taking a direct flight from New York to Tel Aviv. For all the information on this tour, just call us at 800-FAMILIES, option 5, and leave us your name and your address, and we'll send you a brochure. 800-FAMILIES, option 5. Or visit the website twholyland.com.
The Decision America Tour with Franklin Graham.
I'm traveling to all 50 states to hold prayer rallies. We're asking Christians to vote for candidates that stand for biblical principles and biblical moral values and engage in your community by living and sharing your faith.
The Decision America Tour with Franklin Graham.
And I'm going to be sharing the gospel.
You'll find rally dates and locations, plus information on how you can be involved at DecisionAmericaTour.com.
Now is the time to take a stand.
Consider serving the Lord with friendships. It's an opportunity to reach out to the needy around the world. They're now taking applications to volunteer, and they need help in the areas of mechanics, maritime, including deck, engine, and steward departments, food service, warehousing, and office. Check it out at friendships.org or call 337-433-5022.
We're in the financial business. We manage a couple of trusts and some estates, and of course, our own monies too.
Courtney Trotter talks about the charitable gift annuity from the AFA Foundation.
I understand annuities about as much as anyone, I guess, can. So I just felt the charitable gift annuity was a win-win situation for many people that still are generating income and still have assets, because you never know when you may have to draw down on something like that. And if you don't ever have to, then it's even a better gift to get to a really good foundation like AFA. A very solid investment, a good way to help do the Lord's work, and it's there to help us as well.
Find out if the charitable gift annuity can work for you by calling the AFA Foundation at 800-326-4543, extension 345.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. A top expert on the Islamic supremacist Sharia legal code and the jihad it commands has issued a warning about a new epidemic of violence by individuals shouting Allahu Akbar. But Robert Spencer, the director of jihadwatch.com, notes in a powerful new video that according to government officials and media outlets around the globe, the perpetrators are exhibiting one form or another of mental illness. Time after time, no mention is made of their commitment to jihad or to Sharia. Now, there may indeed be a psychological disorder at work, but that would be the mental illness known as willful blindness about Islamic supremacism. Unfortunately, this form of official and media insanity is getting people killed by impeding an accurate diagnosis and treatment of the real disease afflicting us with growing virulence, the Islamist determination to conquer the entire planet. This is Frank Gaffney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
We're the ones that's having a problem with the police department.
He's been vocal about the need for police reform in the city of Tampa and called for an end to black crime. Both concerns hit Ali Muhammad head on early Saturday morning in Ybor City.
I was approached by a young black male who just came up to me and said, give me your earrings.
Held at gunpoint on 8th Avenue on his way home from DJing a club, Muhammad said he had no choice but to comply with the robber.
At the time, he didn't take my cell phone.
He took my book bag, my earrings. I'm following him.
Okay, no, stop.
stop.
Within minutes of talking to Muhammad, officers were on the hunt.
It's an armed robbery. That's a very dangerous situation. We flooded the area.
The suspect was arrested and identified as 18-year-old Antoine Robertson. According to police, he robbed two other women that night.
One lady, she was in tears. She couldn't believe. She said he had the gun in her mouth.
Muhammad, who got his laptop, jewelry, and ID back, said he couldn't help but feel gratitude toward the officers.
Police could be hostile, and they could be very belligerent. Friday night, I met some cool officers that was about business, and that was getting a bad guy off the street.
His own misfortune, an example, he says, of the black-on-black crime he advocates against.
Every black life is valuable right now, especially a black male. And for him to keep going on with the norm, the process of going to jail and ending your life like that, as our boys are doing nowadays, it's very hurting.
He says the traumatic event is an example of why police and the community must be able to come together for a greater good.
I congratulate the police because I'm very anti-police, but I'm not against police relations and community relations.
Now, that 18-year-old suspect, Antoine Robertson, is believed to be homeless, and tonight he is also behind bars. He's facing three charges of armed robbery, possession of a firearm, as well as possession of drugs.
All right, that's Sandy Rios back with you. That's so many ironies in that story. First of all, this black activist, Ali Muhammad, who is, fighting against the police. I don't know if he's part of Black Lives Matter. They didn't mention that. He looks like he might be. I don't know. But he's robbed by another black young man, 18 years old, on the street. The police come and they help him. And so it's a moment of truth for him. So that's part of it. It's like truth sort of sorts us out. The reality of situations makes us learn a lot of things we didn't understand before. And then, of course, we have the story of the young man who, Antoine Robertson, who did the robbing. He's homeless, allegedly. He's using this gun to intimidate and threaten people. And, of course, these guys are not that old, and they are freshly, from their public schools. And that brings me to the topic, because we are participating this week, at least starting this week, with the Truth for Youth campaign. You shall know the truth, Jesus said, and the truth shall set you free. And that's what these boys, these young men need is truth, as do we all. It sorts out our thinking and it changes our lives. Tim Todd is with us. He's the president of Revival Fires International. He's in studio, and we welcome you, Tim. Thanks for joining us.
Glad to be here, Sandy. I appreciate your program.
All right, so when you get Bibles to students, have you ever had students who are just violent gang members or people who are maybe not, in the safe haven of the South, turn their lives around? Any stories about that happening?
Sandy, over in Texas, I was preaching in a meeting, and I gave Bibles to all of the teenagers. They took them to school, and this young lady gave her Truth for Youth Bible to a gang leader by the name of Alex, and his response was, he spit on her and cussed her out. Now, he's the leader of a gang. At lunchtime, he read all of the comic stories in the front section. As you know, there's a powerfully anointed comic stories in the front that deal with the truth about drugs, drunkenness, peer pressure, and a lot of other things that young people are confronted with. When the day was over, Alex met that young lady on the parking lot of the school, and she thought that he was going to be harmful to her. But instead, he said, I read the comics. How can I get a copy of this Bible for my gang members? So she was still frustrated with the fact that he had spit on her and cussed her out from earlier in the day. And she said, you'll have to come to the service and get it for yourself. So he came to the service that night. This gang leader, when I gave the invitation for people to give their life to Jesus, came forward, gave his heart to the Lord. Then he asked me if he could address the church. Well, I'm thinking this is a gang member. I don't want to hand him a microphone. So I held on to the microphone while he talked. Alex said, I've never been to church, never had a Bible. And he said, I want this church to pray for me because I'm going to invite my entire gang to come to church with me tomorrow night for the service. I'm telling you, Sandy, I've never seen so many jaws drop in all of my life when he said that. And so the next night, halfway through the praise and worship, Here comes Alex and his entire gang. By the way, they were late because they were all on house arrest for vandalizing the school and had to get special permission to get out of their house. So they come in, fill up the back two rows, these 12 gang members. When we gave the altar call for salvation, the invitation at the close of the service, Alex and his entire gang came forward, got down on their knees in a semicircle in the front of the church with tears streaming down their cheeks, surrendered to Christ and gave their heart to the Lord. Now think about this. That happened as a result of one bold young lady taking one Truth for Youth Bible, giving it to one gang leader, and as a result of it, that entire gang got saved. And I'm telling you, it had a magnificent act. It affected the that school and that community in a magnificent way as a result of what happened there.
Well, we're talking about Truth for Youth Week, which that's the label, but it's actually a matter of getting Bibles in the hands of other students, and they may not have as dramatic a life story as a gang member, but lost nevertheless. We all know our own hearts. There are varying degrees according to man, but when we are rebelling against God, there's a lot of similarity between us. We are all capable, really, I think, of any sin. And let me just say, if you'd like to help, it's revivalfires.com, revivalfires.com, or call 800-733-4737. That's 800-733-4737. Tim, I know that you insist that students hand these out. You don't just mass produce them, send them in the mail. Why do you do that?
Because we know that we've got young people all across America, Sandy, that they desire to be soul winners and they desire to serve. They just want tools to help them to be able to do that. And that's what we're doing with this project. For those that call 800-733-4737, if they will commit for their children or their grandchildren or the students themselves, that they will give one Bible per household, per teenager per household, every teenager in the home, we will free of charge send a copy of the Truth for Youth Bible to them if they'll commit to give the Bibles away in their school, grade 6 through 12, ages 13 to 18 years old, one Bible per teenager. And that number again, and we got the phones are ready to be answered right now in the office, 800-733-4737. They can order a free Bible for each teenager in their home, and they can get additional copies at a very discounted cost as well.
All right, that sounds great. You know, it reminds me of when I was in high school, I had a good friend named Charles Alexander Gilpin III, and he was an atheist. That's what he called himself. And I used to try to witness to him, Tim, but I was young. I just didn't, I never felt like I ever found the right words. I wish I had had this Bible. And years later, when we were in college, he got cancer and ended up actually dying. But in the process of that, he wrote to me that eventually in college he had come to Christ. But if I'd had a tool like this, something that I could have used to help me explain the gospel to him, to one of my peers, I'd like to think that Chuck would have had a life change much earlier. And it's an amazing story. And of course, life change is available to every single one of us if only we ask God's forgiveness for all of you listening. But this is for kids. It's Truth for Youth Week. Again, the phone number is 800-733-4737. That's 800-733-4737. Or go to revivalfires.com. Tim Todd, thank you so much. He's the president of Revival Fires. This is his baby, his inspiration, and it has touched so many lives. Our goal is to reach 60,000 more in this particular cycle. So I hope that you will join us, revivalfires.com or 800-733-4737. This is Sandy Rios on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.